He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider for Clutch Points. And today on the show, I'm going to give some thoughts, having rewatched the game from Saturday night. And then you guys are going to take over. I'm going to answer a bunch of questions, whether they come from the iTunes reviews, whether they come from the live comments, whether they come from Twitter or Blue Sky, where I asked for questions. Apologies on this live stream taking a quick second. This is a super weird thing. I'm legitimately asking you guys because I've never heard of this. I've never experienced this. I'm going to show you guys. This is wild. I've, again, never seen this happen before. My phone, I was FaceTiming with my folks, and randomly I'm like, dang, my case sounds really kind of dirty. And I like checked to see if, because I did the lawn today, and I checked to see what's going on with my phone because it's like crunchy inside my case. I swear to God, this actually, like, I don't know if you guys can see us. It's literally eroding from like the perimeter of the phone. Have you guys ever seen this before? Like, it just completely is like imploding. And so yeah, if any of you guys have ever experienced this, I need to know, like, if this is a thing that happens. It's an iPhone 15 plus. So if any of you have experienced that, let me know. That was wild. I have a appointment. Fortunately, it's under warranty. So I'll be able to go in and talk to some people tomorrow at the smart bar or whatever they call it, Apple. But I've never seen that. My phone just completely imploded, not unlike the Lakers on Saturday night. But this is, crazy. And this is right after my MacBook just stopped charging. So that's exciting. Apple, what the fuck? I hope you're not a sponsor, but what the fuck? Anyway, we're going to talk about the game. We're going to talk about game one. I rewatched it and was a super popular decision on my part in the Irwin household on Easter. But I rewatched it and took some notes and walked away from it thinking that the Lakers need more from four people. First and foremost, LeBron, then Rui, then Reeves, and then JJ, who I think kind of ties all of that stuff together. So we'll talk about that. And then, like I said, I'll answer your guys' questions from over the weekend. And I asked for questions on Twitter, and I asked for questions on Blue Sky. So we will see, was the temperature bad in your area? Not really. It's been weird. It stormed this morning, and then today was like humid, so I don't think it's a temperature thing. I did see that is a thing that happens with the temperature changes can affect it. So it going from storming this morning to like hot and humid today, I don't know if that might have had an impact on things, but I've never seen anything like that. I've had tons of iPhones. I've dropped iPhones. I've shattered, the front of the phones. That's why I always have my phone in a case, because I know how easily these things break, but apparently it doesn't matter. Sometimes they just break on their own. And here we are. But anyway, yeah, I'm going to try to get my thoughts in order and break down that game for a second time, and then we'll dive into some of your guys' questions. So at the beginning of the game, I'm thinking, hell yeah, the Lakers are going to win. Look at these guys go. I'm going to be able to play this. I was pumped. Like, Luka's just wrecking worlds again. I thought a couple shifts happened mid-game that I don't think the Lakers ever really adjusted for. The very first play of the game, Luka goes around a screen and, gets a screen, gets a switch. Gobert comes out and guards him. Luka gets into the paint, grifts a little bit, gets into Gobert's chest, and gets a foul. Misses one of two free throws. Probably should have made the layup, too. But misses the layup, misses one of two free throws. And for much of that first stint, the Wolves, it looked like, were just kind of like, oh, here we go. Luka's going to get these calls, and we're not going to be able to guard him. And I thought the Wolves didn't have very good energy at the onset of the game. I thought the Lakers had great energy at the onset of the game. And then that first, Luka subs out, and the LeBron and Austin lineup with Vando in at quote-unquote center came in. And that group just couldn't do anything. And I think it was largely in part because the Wolves just did not care about anything Vando was doing on offense. He was setting screens. They just ignored the idea of him coming off of the screen. At one point, he was wide open for a layup and missed it. And I think that even set him even further into his own head offensively. And he was just never right on that end of the court. And this is why I thought maybe coming into the series that maybe the Lakers would be wise to start Dorian and then bring Jackson off of the bench, because that group of, I guess it's Austin, LeBron, I believe Rui is still out there, and then you have Vando, and I think Dorian is out there. And when that group was out there and they didn't have that lob threat, the spacing was just completely out of whack. And if the Lakers are going to play Vando, they need to use him smarter than they did. And this is where I guess I'm starting with JJ, but JJ, I thought, coached that game, brought the exact same approach that the Lakers utilized the last time they played against Minnesota. Minnesota was ready for it. And the Lakers, I don't think, ever adjusted to the adjustments. But JJ, I thought, made a couple big macro mistakes. One being, Vando's minutes didn't always come with Anthony Edwards on the court. And then two, even when Vando was on the court at the same time Anthony Edwards was on the court, the Lakers were switching. They were giving up switches so easily that it didn't matter if Vando started possessions on Anthony Edwards. Unless Minnesota just went straight into isolation with Anthony Edwards, the Lakers were just giving up, possessions where he's being guarded by Reeves and possessions that he's being guarded by Luka, and all of Minnesota, frankly, the entire state of Minnesota. I'm not talking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm talking about the entire state of Minnesota was doing whatever they possibly could to get Austin in isolation and then just absolutely going at him in those possessions. And that was a really bad Austin Reeves game on both sides of the ball. But I think the Lakers didn't do him any favors by giving up those switches so easily. And then offensively, I thought the Lakers' rudimentary offense really hurt Austin because he never had, I think he had maybe three or four easy looks on in the game, knocked down the ones that were easy. But outside of that, it was a lot of like quick catch and shoot stuff, or it was step back jumpers from well beyond 3-point range, or it was, you know, quick catch and shoot stuff out of rhythm from even further out than he normally is comfortable shooting them. I just didn't think the Lakers did him any favors. And on top of that, I thought he was pretty timid in terms of attacking. Even when he got switches, I thought, you know, he needs to be able to break down Mike Conley. He needs to be able to break down Rudy Gobert or Naz Reid or even, you know, Julius Randle. I just thought if the Lakers are going to punish those guys for playing at the same time, you know, two big lineups, the Lakers are going to have to really go at their bigs when they're in space. And I thought the Lakers were really, again, I used the word timid a second ago in Austin, but like one of Raj's theories that he has said, and I really agree with it, is how the Lakers have this tendency to, if they give up switches too easily, they'll allow that laziness to seep into other facets of the game. And I think giving up switches as easily as the Lakers were giving them up is a version of settling on defense and then giving up and then on the other end of it, right, on settling on offense, we know what that looks like. It's step back three pointers with very little ball movement. And the Lakers were doing both of those things on both sides of the court. And I just thought that, you know, you saw a Lakers team that thought the game was going to be a lot easier than it actually was. And I think they were poorly prepared for the moment in terms of strategy and in terms of urgency. And then on top of it, as the game is going on, all of the over switching and over helping and stuff like that, they just looked really ill prepared. They looked really unorganized. And, you know, it's going to, they now have to make up for it by winning an extra home road game. And they haven't been very good on the road this year. So I think of everybody that I watched in that game, I was actually most disappointed with JJ. He even gave a Darvin Ham type of sideline interview where he was like, "We just got to play harder." And I was like, shit, damn it. Like, that is not that. There was part of the problem, but I also thought that the Lakers were not ready in the ways that they needed to be ready for this Wolves team that spent a whole week hearing about how they have no chance, they're these crazy underdogs and all of that stuff. And the Lakers, I thought, took a lot for granted and paid for it. The next guy who I was most disappointed watching here, and I don't know why I didn't write him on the sidebar over there, but the game that we got from LeBron was a really weird one. And he'll do this thing where he kind of feels out the game, feels out the opponent in game one. Game one LeBron has been a thing over the course of his career. And I thought in this one, we got that to kind of the nth degree. And we'll see how he responds in game two. Normally game two is a pretty special one. But unless they win game one, then sometimes he'll kind of ease himself into game two. But yeah, I thought this was a really bad LeBron game. Defensively, I didn't think that he was as impactful as he needs to be if he isn't going to be a play with his with any force on offense. I thought it was a very kind of weak game from LeBron. I thought that he didn't get out in transition often enough, and I thought there were some opportunities to do so, and the Lakers instead kind of slowed the game down, and even when they were down, they were doing that. I thought that was really weird. It's funny. We'll do this thing with offense where everybody talks about rhythm in offense, somebody shooting rhythm, the rhythm to a pick and roll, the timing on offensive sets, or whether or not they even call offensive sets. We understand that rhythm is a big part of basketball on the offensive side of it. And I think we tend to ignore it on the defensive side. And I thought last night or Saturday night, by the time you guys are listening to this in the morning, I thought Saturday night, the Lakers had no defensive rhythm whatsoever. There was no consistency when it was, all right, LeBron is guarding Randall in the post. And if I'm Jared Vanderbilt, that is a situation where I just let LeBron go to work on Jared Vanderbilt in the post. But I let LeBron handle Julius Randle in the post. But oftentimes you saw overhelping. Their closeouts, I thought, were all over the place. You would have these closeouts where it was like, we'll just jump and see what happens. And I just, you can't. That's not playoff basketball. That's not playoff defense. And I think, that game there and that approach to the game, that's something that the coach needs to hammer home in timeouts and at halftime and stuff like that. What are you doing helping? It's one thing to help to shade over when Luka is guarding Anthony Edwards on the perimeter. Okay, yeah, get shade a little bit, pre-rotate a little bit, see what's going on there. But if Luka is guarding like Naz Reid in the post or something like that, that's one of the spots that Luka is perfectly fine. Don't go down there and help. And yeah, I thought Vando was really trying to force things defensively, and sometimes it was to their benefit, but I thought oftentimes it was just kind of, I don't know if you guys saw Semi-Pro, but there was the practice where they're working on the play or the offensive system, and they're running this offensive system until everybody pukes, right? And at one point, Will Ferrell's character just starts yelling, "I'm going rogue, I'm going rogue," and he just starts running around in a circle. And I thought that's essentially the game that we saw from Jared Vanderbilt, where he was like, And I think this happened a lot of times when Vando was on the court and Anthony Edwards wasn't, where he's like, I have all of this pent up energy. I am literally vibrating with energy right now. I'm shaking because I want to be able to help this team win. And it led to some mental mistakes there and over helping that let some of Minnesota's guys just pop open. And I think from a defensive standpoint, I thought that LeBron was a part of some of those problems. But I also thought offensively, it was so much just kind of standing there. And one of the things I asked Pete about the last time he and I spoke was how we didn't get a whole bunch of Luka LeBron stuff over the course of the back half of the season or after the Luka Doncic, I literally have an iPhone shard in my finger. Cool. But I asked Pete about, like, that was one of the things that made me a little nervous, was waiting for any kind of set with those guys being run consistently. And I just thought the offensive approach on the back half of the season was actually pretty inconsistent, and what that leads to was inconsistent habits or or non-existent habits. And I thought the Lakers paid for some of those bad or inconsistent or non-existent habits that kind of painted themselves into, you know, the corner that they painted themselves into with their offensive approach. And yeah, I, you know, JJ Redick, again, I know I talked about it a lot right after the game, but JJ said after the game, yeah, we got to figure out a way to get the ball to LeBron with a head of steam already. And one of the ways that you can do that, especially with Minnesota switching as much as they did, is to change the angle on the screens. So what the Lakers were doing a lot of, and specifically with, you know, LeBron screens or Austin screens, was they would set very lateral screens, screens around the perimeter. And the point of those kinds of screens was to get the switch so that you could match up hunt. But the problem with very lateral screens is it doesn't really do anything for the roller. And this is something that the Lakers are going to have to, I think, adjust with is, all right, Minnesota's switching everything. And rather than not run pick and roll or run pick and roll just to match up hunt, I think what the Lakers are going to have to do is set some screens at a different angle that pierces the defense and either the ball handler in the pick and roll gets to turn the corner that much easier, or the roller, you know, the guy who is setting the screen, he now gets to, you know, turn and face the basket with his guy all the way on his backside. So one of those guys, whether it's the ball handler or the screener, one of those guys should be able to get the ball and have their guy in jail behind them and be able to get some forward momentum, some downhill momentum going to the basket. And again, we just never got any such adjustments over the course of the game. And, you know, this was one of the things that Pete and I kind of talked about a little bit, was this is what I'm a little nervous about with JJ, is a more experienced coach would maybe notice that a little bit more and make that adjustment mid-game rather than wait for that game to go as poorly as it did. And now we have to hope that he makes that adjustment coming into game two. And now the problem with it also is if he makes that adjustment, if Minnesota is ready for that adjustment, then all of that work you did between games one and two just don't really do much for you. So, that's one thing that I think the Lakers are going to be really looking to do is set more vertical screens, whether it's with Luka and LeBron or with Austin and LeBron, where either LeBron is getting the ball in the short roll or he's getting the ball going to the basket with a pocket pass, either coming from Austin or from Luka, that puts Minnesota in a tougher spot than they ever were in game one. They need to make some kind of an offensive adjustment to get LeBron a lot more involved than he was, because the your turn, my turn stuff really let Minnesota off the hook. All right, let's the next guy that I need a lot more from is Rui Hachimura. Watching that game, that was a bad Rui Hachimura game. And for whatever reason, people think that I don't like Rui. It's not that at all. I just think the Lakers need a lot from him, and my expectations on Rui are higher because of how much how reliant the Lakers are on him. When Jovan and I talked about this series, he's the guy who we both said, yeah, the Lakers need a good Rui series if they're going to win this thing, especially handily. And if the Lakers, you know, are going to get that kind of a performance from Rui from here on out, they're in big trouble. And Minnesota does this thing, and I talked about this quite a bit in the run-up to the series. Minnesota is incredible with their closeouts, and they are they get to you in a heartbeat, and it forces you to have to make your decisions that much faster. Rui is not good with that stuff. Rui is not a quick decision maker. And if he is going to make decisions more quickly, oftentimes it's because he's guessing going into a play. And sometimes he guesses right. Sometimes he's like, all right, I'm going to attack this closeout no matter what. And if that closeout is as reckless as Minnesota's closeouts are, sometimes it just works out in Rui's favor. But other times what will happen is he'll guess wrong and he'll go to attack a closeout that he doesn't really necessarily have to attack or have the angle to attack. And that gets him into some trouble too. So Rui is going to have to make his decisions faster. Minnesota, like Naz Reid, had that one play where he blocked Rui's three altogether. Like, they are long, they are athletic, they work in, you know, they are very they work on this over the course of the entire season, but they're very good at, you know, shading with one, you know, in one direction, but having their weight on their other foot so that when that pass goes to their player, they are already on their way out to close out to get their, you know, that half of a second faster. And what that leads to is Rui, who's big and can oftentimes get away with kind of a slower release because he's so big. But with Minnesota, if he's being guarded by Anthony Edwards or Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Jaden McDaniels, those guys are all, especially McDaniels, they're all very athletic and long, and Naz Reid also. Those guys just get back into the picture really quickly, and I think it really affected Rui's sight line on some of his jumpers. A couple he made anyway. And that might be just kind of what he's going to have to do, is get used to knocking down more contested jumpers than maybe he's accustomed to. But one thing that he's going to have to figure out, and this is a really tough thing to learn on the fly, but some guys will do, Lonzo is the guy who comes to mind most in doing this, but what they'll do is they'll take regular kind of snapshots of the basketball court around them. That way, if the ball comes to them, they have a decent idea of where everybody is, and therefore know, all right, if I'm going to make a quick, you know, swing pass, here's who's standing over there. Or if I'm catching the swing pass, I know where my defender is. Will I or will I not have enough time to get the shot off, or should I attack this closeout? Rui is going to have to figure out a way to do that more effectively than he did in that game. And, you know, the tough thing is, and this is why Minnesota, and again, we've talked about this a ton, but part of the reason that Minnesota is so good at closing out, or feels that they can close out so recklessly, is because even if their guy attacks the closeout and gets by them, they know that Rudy Gobert is sitting there waiting for him. So the Lakers are going to have to figure out a way to either play Rudy Gobert off of the court and slow down the closeouts that way, or Rui is just going to have to just play better. And you know, I think it's going to be a combination of all of those things. And then defensively, and then in terms of rebounding, Rui is going to have to be a lot more physical. I thought Minnesota really took it to the Lakers with their physicality over the course of the game. And the player who I thought kind of shied away from that physicality the most was probably Rui. And the Lakers can't have that. He needs to be better. Finally, and you know, some of these topics kind of overlap. The Reeves, Austin would benefit from changing the angle on the pick and roll some. I also thought when Minnesota went under screens on him, or they, or even if they didn't go under screens, they went into a drop or a deep drop, and I didn't think Austin punished guys enough for that. He's going to have to be more willing to pull the trigger on some of those shots than he was in game one. But the biggest thing is, he, I think of I think it's between him and Luka who will get Rudy Gobert off of the court the quickest. And it's by turning the corner. It's by closing down that space and getting into Gobert's shirt and forcing the referees to make a call there when Rudy jumps through them to block the shot. Luka did that on the first play of the game, went back to it, and then the referees didn't make that call a little bit later in the game. And I thought that was one of the moments that the Wolves were like, oh, okay, all right. That changes things a bit. So, you know, some of this is going to have to, you know, some we'll see if the Lakers get a couple more of those calls in game two than they got in game one. But yeah, Austin, you know, when the last time that these two teams played, Austin pretty mercilessly attacked Naz Reid and Rudy Gobert and Julius. Gobert and Randall didn't play in that one, but he was just going at Naz Reid constantly all game. And I thought in game one, he was pretty timid. He didn't go at Naz Reid as much as he should have, you know, let alone Gobert and let alone Julius Randall. So that's going to have to change. And then defensively, again, the Lakers just, they can't give up switches the way that they did in game one. It was so frustrating to watch the first time. And it made me even angrier the second time I watched it. It was like, it's barely, you know, some Wolves players coming up and he's barely touching the defender and the Lakers are already getting ready to switch, whether it's on or off of the ball. And all that does, it wasn't gumming up Minnesota's offense in any real way. If anything, it was lightening the load of what the offense needed to do for them. And they were getting whatever matchup that they wanted. And they were just, I think Nikias tweeted out the stats that they attacked Austin some like 12 times and scored 20 points on those 12 possessions or something like that. Like the Lakers need to protect Austin and Luka better with the guys that they have out there to protect those guys. It was just a really weird approach that the Lakers took offensively and defensively. And I thought that the three guys that we've talked about here felt the, well, Rui, I think Rui played bad in his own right, but I think Austin and LeBron kind of suffered the Lakers approach to this game pretty thoroughly. All right, let's I think that's all I got, so I'm gonna go ahead and dive into some of your guys's questions here. The first question I'll take, I'll go ahead and go with Blue Sky first. Velotus writes, do you find yourself wishing at all that the Williams trade wasn't rescinded, even given what they were given or what they were giving up to get him? I don't know that Williams would have been that much more effective. The problem is, and I think this actually kind of weighed into the Lakers' decision to rescind the trade. I just don't know that JJ wants to play a non-elite center. And I think that's something that he is going to have to rethink in the summer. Now maybe he'll be forced to rethink it by the Lakers going out and getting a better center that he trusts a little bit more. But I would rather have Jackson Hayes played off of the court than have JJ Redick approach the game knowing that eventually he's just going to go away from him. And you know, look, maybe it's possible that Jackson just doesn't have a spot on this in this rotation or in this series, but the Lakers are going to need more from Jackson, and they need to bring him into the fold offensively in order to keep Minnesota a lot more honest than they were than when Jackson subbed out and Vando subbed in and was setting those screens, because when Vando was setting screens on offense, you could actually see Minnesota just like ignore him, whatever. If he wants to roll, cool. If he wants to pop, cool. Whatever he's doing, let him do it over there. We will not pay any attention to him. And The Lakers just can't have that. And when Jackson sets screens, at the very least, Minnesota tags, feels the need to tag the roller there in Jackson Hayes. And they don't even do that with Vando. They don't feel the need to tag the roller there, because it's like, even if Vando gets a wide open layup, it's not a guarantee that he's going to make it. He's maybe the worst offensive player I've ever seen. So, yeah, they need to use Vando smarter when they do use him. And I don't think the Lakers can just play Jackson Hayes, whatever it was, 6 or 8 minutes that he played in last night's game. He's too big a part of what they look like at their best for him to play as little as he did last night. But I guess, no, sorry, to answer the question, I wouldn't have loved giving up everything that the Lakers were giving up for Williams. I mean, at the end of the day, I think they were giving up a couple seconds and Dalton and Cam. Dalton's not playing in this series, it doesn't look like, and Cam obviously is not even on the team anymore, and second round picks are just kind of second round picks. So maybe if Williams is just slightly better than Jackson, maybe JJ actually plays him. But there's no guarantee he'd be healthy, and there's no guarantee that JJ would play him any more than he is currently playing Jackson Hayes. And until JJ kind of, you know, comes to Jesus about the importance of bigs in playoff series, the Lakers are I think they're always going to be playing at a bit of a disadvantage, because like, The Wolves in game one were bigger, stronger, and faster. You can't lose all of those things, and from a physicality standpoint. And Jackson at least makes it so that they aren't so much bigger than you. You know, we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what kind of role Jackson plays in game two here, because I don't think they can survive only playing 8 minutes of basketball with a center. I just don't think that's a sustainable model moving forward, especially against this team. All right, let's go to Twitter, where a lot of people chiming in on the iPhone situation. It's crazy. Somebody says that it happened to their 11 Pro Max that a faulty battery slowly leaks into the motherboard. Huh. Okay, yeah. Somebody says that they had a battery that Apple they have had batteries overheat, and that has led to this. Interesting. I sure hope so, because I don't want to buy a new freaking phone. All right, let's go to the questions that you guys had from Twitter. I'll start here because it's there's proof that this person is subscribed at KRV22 underscore writes, how confident are you that the Lakers can still win this series? Why? I was leaning Lakers in six, but I'm now thinking Minnesota in five or six. The Wolves are just too physical. I want to see what game two looks like. I still have some faith here that the Lakers will look a lot better than they looked in game one. I think the Lakers got punched in the mouth and have now heard idiots like myself say that they responded very softly to being punched in the mouth. If I'm saying it and all these other shows are saying it and ESPN is saying it, they've been hearing that for the last, and they will have heard it for 48 plus hours by the time they play their next game. So I'm hoping that they approach this next game with a completely different mindset from a physicality standpoint. I think they'll win game two. And then, you know, from there, can you get yourself the split in Minnesota, which I think they can get. And then, you know, if you get the split and now it's a 3-game series with two of those games in LA, I think the Lakers can still win it. It's just their margins have decreased incredibly. And, you know, I just don't think LeBron or Luka are all that interested in going home after one, you know, in the first round, in their first trip to the playoffs together. Now, what I will say is if the Lakers are only going to play 8 minutes of Jackson Hayes and they're going to play 40 minutes of centerless basketball moving forward, that does make me rethink to a certain degree whether or not they can win a championship this year. So that's something that they're going to need to address is the approach that they have from a size standpoint. They can't be as small as they were for as long as they were, not just the series, but moving forward. There's centerless basketball, their small ball is effective. But part of the reason that small ball tends to be effective is because you use it a lot more intelligently and a lot more efficiently than the Lakers did. And that's something that the Lakers are going to have to rethink. George Santiago, will you still go with a 9-man rotation or do they need to cut it down to 8 now? I would still try the 9-man rotation. Now you can't play Goodwin and Vando together. That was a really weird combination that JJ went with. Again, super weird game from JJ Redick. I thought he was all out of sorts in that game. So hopefully that gets better. But again, it's a version of what I just talked about where, like, I don't think the Lakers are athletic enough if you don't play Jordan Goodwin at all, and if you trim Jared Vanderbilt completely out of the rotation, that makes them kind of small, well, really small, not very physical, not all that fast, and not very forceful defensively, and that's where you start to worry about barriers of entry in regards to athleticism and physicality and size. So I wouldn't trim it down quite yet, but I would rethink the way that they're using Jared Vanderbilt. If he's on the court and Anthony Edwards isn't on the court, then the Lakers are just kind of shooting themselves in the foot. That should never, ever, ever, ever happen. Ever. Ever. Fred Joel tweeted the picture of Anthony Edwards kind of taunting Luka, and Luka's kind of response to it, and the way that he's kind of looking at Anthony Edwards. I hope that Luka takes that personally, and he tends to. We saw how he responded to Devin Booker talking some mess in those series, and how much pleasure Luka took in taking that to him. And Anthony Edwards is very much going to let you know that he thinks he owns you in a matchup. And if that is going to be something that he feels comfortable doing, then I do think that that's something that Luka isn't going to take very lightly. And I also think that the rest of the Lakers saw that meme and saw that picture there. And I would hope are also taking that kind of personally and being like, no, man, you don't get to do that on our home court to our best player. Fuck that. Like, let's fight about, like, there are some things that you just got to fight over, you know, even if you might lose the fight because Minnesota's bigger. But there are some things that the Lakers can't just take sitting down. And that image is one of those things. If the Lakers don't respond to that image, then they're not going to respond to anything. Wisnocious writes, how bad are you going to crash out if it's a sweep? Oof, man. Crash out? I don't know if I would necessarily fully crash out. I crashed out today when in a matter of like 2 weeks, I had to buy a new lawnmower. I have to buy a new iPad. I have to buy a new Mac, potentially MacBook. And then today found out that my iPhone is apparently disintegrating from the inside out. I didn't handle that very well. So I don't think I would necessarily be as angry about this series as I was about my phone today. But that said, if the Lakers get swept after that meme, after the way that they got punched in the face, like that's one of those things that that would require serious overhaul of the culture there. Cause I always worry about teams that don't respond in the postseason to some of this adversity. And if the Lakers get swept, that would indicate to me that some of their core players here don't have what it's going to take to compete at the level that you need to compete while you have Luka. So need to see a lot more from Rui, need to see a lot more from Dorian, just need to see a lot more give a bleep. And yeah, I would say that, like, would I crash out? No, but I would certainly rip this team a new one if they wind up getting swept. Like, now more than I talk about it, crash out's a hard phrase. Well, for one thing, saying it with my hat backwards makes me feel really, really old. It's kind of like talking about aura. Like, people my age don't get to talk about crashing out. I turned 40 next year. I probably would not handle it very well if they got swept, because that would indicate that there's some, like my phone, some internal rot that is not necessarily fixable, and Apple would have to replace my Apple. I'm looking at you. You're going to have to replace my phone. We did get a starred comment, which means I get to play this. Fuck Washington! All right, so the star comment here comes from JK Productions. Percent chance that you're giving the Lakers to win game two. What's the script? So percent chance, I'll say 80% chance that I think Lakers win game two. The script, it starts with playing Rudy Gobert completely off of the court. If the Lakers, Rudy Gobert was a plus 14. In that game, if Rudy Gobert is a plus 8 or higher, maybe even like 6 or 7 or higher, the Lakers lose those games. He cannot be a plus player in this series if the Lakers are going to have any chance whatsoever. Same goes for Julius Randle. Like, the longer that those guys are viable options for Minnesota, the better their chances get against the Lakers. So the Lakers are going to have to figure out a way to get Rudy Gobert off of the court, to remind Julius Randle that he's one of the worst players in playoff history. They're going to have to figure out ways to look better against those guys. Otherwise, it is a long series. And I don't even necessarily mean in terms of like length of series. I mean, it could get ugly quickly if the Lakers can't play those guys off the court consistently. So it starts there. And then I think the next thing that they would have to do is really go at, like, I thought they let Mike Conley and Dante DiVincenzo off of the hook in terms of putting those guys in actions. And like, they were doing a lot of screen setting with guys that they wanted to hunt from the perimeter, but they just have to be a lot more creative with the usage of screens and the angles, you know, you talked about earlier. That's the next thing. So you got to play Rudy Gobert off the court. probably also got to play Julius Randle off of the court. And then you can't make Mike Conley look as comfortable as he did in that series. Maybe he has been just kind of saving his legs for the postseason, but all year he has looked pretty washed. Last night he looked incredible, and I don't like the Lakers' chances if he doesn't if he is able to look the way that he did consistently over the course of the series. Man. All right. Let's see. I'm going to go through here and see. All right. Yeah. So I'm seeing a lot of overreaction here. And yeah, overall, I just think I get it. Playoffs are funny in sports because when you win, you feel like you're never going to lose ever again. And then when you lose, you feel like you're never going to win ever again. And it's never as bad or it's never as good as you think, unless you are truly just outmatched in a series, or unless your team is like the 16-1 Lakers or whatever it was, 15-1 Lakers. I tend to think that the Lakers are going to bounce back, win game two, maybe even handily. But look, if they don't win game two, then a lot of those comments about, you know, this team, this and this team, that and that, then I'll entertain those comments. I'll even show them on the show more often than I have. But as it stands right now, I am not quite ready to bury this Lakers team. Not even a little bit. All right. Almost hit the wrong button. All right. You guys can kind of hear my voice a little bit. So I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here. Hope everybody had a great Easter weekend outside of that game, obviously. Hope you guys to those of you who celebrate Easter, happy Easter, happy Passover. To anybody who was celebrating anything today, hope you did so safely. The plan for tomorrow is I have a guest hopefully lined up to talk about this game tomorrow evening or so. And then we're right back at it again on Tuesday. And hopefully Tuesday goes a hell of a lot better than it did Saturday night. So until then, and until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Wrong button. That's awkward.
Bye, everyone.